The workday is done. Social media is heating up.
Ding, ding, boys. School's in session.
Welcome to Sports Talk with Personality. You riding with us?
Yes.
Great. Coming to argue?
That's a given.
Even better. 336-777-1600.
Let's get the show going.
Clock out. Crank up.
People got the popcorn. Let's give them a show.
The drive starts now on WSJS.
Let's get this thing rolling on a Monday. I'm Will Dalton. This is The Drive right here on WSJS. News, talk, and yes, sports for the triad. Wasn't that a great sports weekend? I guess it depends on who you ask. If you ask a Duke fan, probably not so much. If you ask a Patriots fan, probably not so much. But regardless, we got to get into all of it, and I'm glad you're here to chop it up with me. 336-777-1600 is the phone number as we get into a Monday. So I do want to start with the Super Bowl. I want to do that because at one point, Sam Darnold was seeing ghosts. Now he's seeing a Super Bowl trophy. So this, to me, was... And there were so many cool angles to the Super Bowl. Like, we talked about it all last week when it came to, you know, the local angles, whether it was Drake May having such a quick turnaround in New England, and then you have, of course, Sam Darnold making his redemption story, and it's now officially complete, where he came from a situation in the with the Jets, and then with the Panthers, where he was asked to try and fix problems with very dysfunctional franchises. I mean, the Jets, like, I'm sorry that a 22-year-old coming out of USC can't fix a historically dysfunctional Jets team. I'm sorry. And the Panthers were right at the height of their dysfunction with Matt Rhule. And it wasn't a great situation. But Sam Darnold, when he went to the 49ers, I feel like that's where everything changed for him. So he, of course, after Carolina, he went to San Fran, ironically enough, where that Super Bowl was last night. And, you know, he got in there with Kyle Shanahan, and he was a backup. And there was a lot of questions on whether or not he was going to be a career backup moving forward. But then he got another opportunity in Minnesota. And you know, Sam Darnold, to his credit, because a lot of quarterbacks would have gone to a situation like that, and, you know, they would have sulked, or they would have just folded up shop and, you know, gave in, or just like, okay, I'm just a career backup now. But Sam didn't do that. He sat, and he learned, and he gathered information, and he got repetitions and repetition in practice. He goes to a situation in Minnesota. He wins 14 games there. Minnesota's got to be kicking themselves right now. Then he goes to Seattle, wins 14 games again. We talked about this stat on Friday, where between the time that Sam Darnold got his job back after being benched in Carolina, he got his job back November 27th, I think it was, of that year in 2022. From that moment to today, he is the winningest quarterback in the regular season at 80% wins of his games. The next one is Jalen Hurts behind him. That's an impressive stat. Now, Minnesota, they had a really good supporting cast for him. Seattle, of course, had a really good supporting cast for him. But it was so impressive last night in the, you know, getting to the actual game itself, that he didn't make any mistakes. No mistakes. And listen, we saw that Patriots defense flying around. We saw it. So I thought it was really interesting, you know, because Sam Darnold, he talked, this was on ESPN. The game itself was on NBC, but this was on ESPN last night, where he got on the set and he was talking about, yeah, it's very cliche, because the Seattle, whether it's offense, whether it's defense, whether it's special teams, they're very unified. And I think Sam Darnold is a big piece of that. And I think that culture that they're building there is a big piece of that. And Sam Darnold, after the game, he actually spoke to that. It's not just coach speak. It's actually how they go about things.
A lot of it can be coach talk, you know. You guys know, like, you always try every single offseason, okay, you know, we're building a team. It's going to be, you know, three groups, you know, special teams, defense, offense. We got to play as one. We got to play complementary football, yada, yada. We've heard it all. But I think the leaders that we have at every position group is really special. Like, we have guys that, you know, we have the leaders and the older veterans that we're pushing that message every single day.
And it showed. It showed on the field. And again, we saw that Patriots blitz early in the game, because the thing about Sam is if you make him run around, in years past he would make a mistake. That's when seeing ghost Sam Darnold would come out. But that hasn't happened lately. In fact, I found this stat that I thought was just incredible, and I thought you guys might enjoy this. He joins a list of quarterbacks that include Drew Brees, Steve Young, and Troy Aikman. And that list, what that is since 1990, all of those quarterbacks won Super Bowls, and they did not turn the ball over one time at any point in the playoffs. Not a pick, not a fumble, one time. There's only four quarterbacks since 90 that's done it, and that's the list. That's pretty impressive stuff. And again, in these playoffs, you went up against the Rams. That wasn't easy. You went up against Robert Saleh's 49ers defense. You went up against, again, this Patriots defense that, I mean, Christian Gonzalez was all over the place last night. So I thought it was interesting, this story that Sam Darnold has been on lately. And it's such a great redemption story. He's such an easy guy to root for. And I think that his makeup is a big part of this. Christian McCaffrey, he actually was on Colin Cowherd, and we have this clip as well. He was on Colin Cowherd about a week ago. This was Super Bowl media week, so that, you know, he was making all the runs down there, and this was something you could have heard right here on WSJS, where McCaffrey, he's been with Darnold twice now. Listen to McCaffrey.
I remember when people asked me about Sam when I had first, you know, I'd always known him a little bit, but when I'd first met him in Carolina, from the jump, I was like, this guy's a dude. And the more and more you see him at practice, that you see the throws you make, you understand why he's a top pick in the draft. And then you're around him more, and you're like, this is one of the best players I've been around, period.
Wow.
And it's because of how talented his arm is. He's way more athletic than people give him credit for. And he's really good at taking what's given to him and doing his job. And I think so many times you see quarterbacks who start out in bad situations and get the blame for it. And he's somebody that I can't say enough good things about.
He just needed somebody to believe in him. That's it. And again, that was Kyle Shanahan. That was the 49ers. And, you know, when you're in a toxic relationship in this situation, the Jets, the Panthers, or you're in a toxic work situation, like, it rubs off on you. You feel that energy a little bit. You can't help but, I mean, you can try to fight it off, but you can't help but, like, feel that energy. And boy, when you get in a good situation, Minnesota, Seattle, with good people, good pieces, good organization around you, good coaches, you can see that as well. The Seahawks, they get the win over the Patriots. Kenneth Walker, the MVP, but Sam Darnold, what a redemption story that we're going to be talking about for a long time now.
I, too, was listening to that interview with Colin and Christian McCaffrey. And it's not just Christian McCaffrey. Everybody that you talk to that has played with Sam Darnold say the same thing. He's a dog.
He's a dog, man.
Ready to fight.
He is.
And ready to just put it all out there. And they all talk about how smart he is, how talented he is. And, you know, I go back in time when the Raiders selected David Carr.
All right, yeah.
And here was a quarterback coming out of college. I thought he was outstanding. I thought he was great. And his first season as a rookie got sacked over 70 times. And he never recovered. Never recovered. And it's sad because this was a good kid and never got another opportunity, because 3 years with the Raiders just diminished him, just demolished, like never to come back.
It makes you think about Bryce Young a little bit, because in fact, that stat about David Carr and his all those sacks that came up a lot because Bryce got sacked, I believe, the next most amount of times ever to that. It was like 62 or 3 or something in that ballpark.
Right.
And you look at his kind of – he's on to come up a little bit. So there's a lot of links to this where, you know, Sam Darnold, somebody gave him another chance. He could have very easily been given up on. With the Panthers and Bryce Young, Dave Canales, Dan Morgan, after that benching, they gave him another chance. Now, that Andy Dalton car crash helped out. Right. But you see the trajectory. So that's what – I mean, he's only 24 years old.
And, you know, five teams. He's 24. He's been on five different teams. That usually says, you're not very good.
Well, Bryce Young's 24.
No, I was talking about Darnold.
Okay. Five, I think he's older than 24.
You know, five teams. Yeah, okay. Okay, I thought you were talking about Darnold. Sorry.
No.
But five teams for Sam Darnold. And it typically breaks down to, if you've been on five different teams in that short a span, you're just not very good. He's a Super Bowl champion now.
It's incredible.
I just think it's one of those cool stories, kind of like, who was the Rams quarterback?
Warner.
Kurt Warner.
Yeah, that's a great example.
Yeah.
That's a great example. By the way, that's DJ Turner on the sticks, on the ones and twos. How you doing today?
I'm doing good.
You sure about that after Saturday night?
You know, I can't complain. Yeah. I thought the game was another classic Duke Carolina game. I mean, if you break down that game statistically, I mean, the two big dogs, they delivered. Boozer, 24 points, 11 rebounds. Caleb Wilson, 23 points for the Tar Heels. And what impressed me about Caleb Wilson, none of those shots were easy.
Mm-mm.
They were defended extremely well. And, I mean, they talked about it on the broadcast, but unless you're watching it, you really don't understand. There's hands in your face. They're going up with you. He's elevating up over people and knocking it down. Like, it was crazy. But just how crazy was this game? This is how even it was.
Mm-hmm.
Duke shot 45% from the field, Carolina 47. Duke shot 37% from three, the Tar Heels 42%. Duke out-rebounded Carolina 38-26. Tar Heels won the turnover battle 8-7. I think they were separated by two assists. I think one team had one more foul than the other team. I mean, it was about as even and close as you could get across the board. And, of course, it took a last-second shot for someone to claim victory in that game.
Listen, it's the greatest rivalry in sports.
It is.
We said that last week. We'll get to that in a second. But it's the greatest rivalry in sports. And shocker, it delivered again. So, and with all those margins being that thin,
it's crazy.
It happens that way almost every time. Last year, not so much. But look, even last year in the ACC title game when they met for a third time, it took a Jalen Withers foul violation on the foot on the line to decide. Because like Carolina should have won that one. So it really doesn't matter. But yes, it was one of the crazier experiences I've ever had going to a game.
And nobody gets it. When you say throw out the records,
throw out
the statistics,
no.
You just don't know this rivalry. And when you throw up the numbers of what they've done the last 50 years, I mean, it's even across the board.
Well, and think about this. It's like the argument always comes up for other great rivalries, Alabama, Auburn.
No. So when was the last time Alabama and Auburn was a legit rivalry?
I mean, it's legit, but I mean in terms of competitiveness,
no,
you're right.
Yeah, competitiveness, no.
The only one...
Bo Jackson?
Maybe. The only one that comes close is Ohio State-Michigan. That's the only one.
And it's still way back there.
Well, and the reason that is, I think, is because it's very lopsided. Like, Ohio State completely dominated the 2000s and the 2010s.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Michigan's won four of the last five, I'm pretty sure. But you see how lopsided it is? It's not this Carolina Duke, they win a couple or win one, then they win one. It doesn't go that way. And you can't say throw out the record books for Ohio State, Michigan. You can't do it.
Because you can take Carolina playing Duke and Carolina having a down year, and it's going to be a 2 or 3 point game.
Mm-hmm.
Or vice versa. You have Duke in a down year and Carolina on a big year. These two teams meet. It goes down to the wire.
and go down to the wire it did. So we'll break down the game more in detail. I think we'll actually do that here in just a minute because I want to dive a little further into this. And there's some clips I want you to hear. David Shoemate, Jones Angel. We like to get the local radio calls in here. So coming up next, we dive a little further into this game. We hear some sound from Hubert Davis, from Seth Trimble. We hear the radio calls. That's all coming up next on The Drive right here on WSJS.
You're on the air.
Your afternoon just found its fast lane. You're on The Drive.
Oh, that's good tunes. That's good tunes. You're on WSJS, and you're listening to The Drive. I'm Will Dalton. Some of you might know me as WD, though. Hanging out here on a Monday, post-Super Bowl, post-Carolina Duke, and the Carolina Duke piece of this is what I wanted to get into next with you. We'll actually have David Glenn on at 5:30 to get his breakdown of the game. Plus, I want to get his take on the court storming piece of this because, yet again, that is a part of the conversation. But getting to the actual game, though. So we knew this was going to be another great chapter, as it always is, because this one featured Caleb Wilson, this one featured Cam Boozer, and, you know, they did put on a show. Cam had 24, Caleb had 23, but in the first half, Carolina was playing tight. Now, Duke's defense also was helping that process along as well, but I mean just in general, like with the moment, a lot of the plays that Carolina tried to run, a lot of the things that they were trying to do, they just, I don't know, they looked a little tense. Like I was sitting next to Ross Martin of the Big Hitters Only podcast. Also, he was there doing some stuff for CBS Sports, and we kept talking about that through the first half. I was like, God, they looked tight. Loosen up a little bit. But the thing that kept them in the game was, of course, you guessed it, Caleb Wilson. But at halftime, I went down because the internet at the Smith Center, especially for the Carolina Duke game, is just horrendous. Like you can't because it's just, I mean, it's a slam packed arena and you have so many media members there, a little bit more than usual, and you can't post anything. So I went down at halftime to try and post some stuff. And Andrew Jones of Tar Heel 24/7, he was down there and, you know, somebody was talking to him about how Caleb Wilson is essentially playing hero ball right now. And he's like, yeah, because like none of these baskets or next to none that he's hitting are assisted. They're all him trying to get his own shot. And he's having to try and create his own shot. Now, Caleb Wilson's good enough to where it was working out. But nobody, like Henry Vassar was a complete no-show.
Okay, so I'll interrupt here.
Yeah.
Caleb Wilson, at the very start of the game, they weren't getting him the ball.
Mm-mm.
First half, they weren't setting up Vassar. Vassar is a great basketball player. Caleb
Terrific.
Wilson, a great basketball player. There's no reason why those guys should not be touching the ball every single play. It's kind of like the Armando Bacot situation. Where
Shout out.
Here's a guy that's busting his butt down low. He rebounds, he's good down low, and for some reason that final year at Carolina, they just didn't get him the ball. Shame on his teammates.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys weren't finding these two particular people, and it was hard for them to get on track.
You've got to have good circulation. You've got to have good ball movement. And to that point, I mean, Carolina, they played tight, but it was in the second half, though. So. That, as we all know, this thing got nuts. Because Duke got in some foul trouble coming out of halftime. Cam Boozer had a few. Malik Brown had a few. Pat Gamba ended up fouling out. I think Malik Brown he finished with four.
Right.
But the thing that was puzzling is Carolina was continuing to shoot jump shots, even though so these guys were in foul trouble on the other side. But in the second half, they finally started to go at him a little bit. And so you get to the final 2 minutes and change of the game, where it was Derek Dixon that hit the first three to bring it within three. Then Henry Vassar hits another one to tie it up. Duke goes down. Kambuzer tries to go up for that highly contested layup. You can decide on your own if you think it was a foul or not. A lot of people think it was. But Carolina gets the rebound. Timeout, Carolina. They're drawing up a play. And at the game, Roy Williams came up on the Jumbotron, like just getting the people fired up as he did that like double fist, you know, let's go, as like he did when he was coaching, and it just, the crowd went crazy for it. So they come back. You all saw it. They draw up the play. There's like 10 point whatever seconds to go. Derek Dixon comes around, comes to the basket. A couple of defenders come in, and Seth Trimble, just not a defender within 10 feet of him.
Maybe 20.
Yeah, in the corner. And Hubert Davis said after the game, this is a play that they work on where, you know, the guard or Dixon or whoever's got the ball, like they kind of drive in and try to get people to crash. And a lot of times, somebody's right there on the corner, whoever it is. This time it was Seth Trimble. The shot goes up. The shot goes in. And pandemonium breaks loose. We actually have a couple of the radio calls from this moment. We'll start with the Duke side of things. David Shoemate, you could hear this on WSJS if you're listening. David Shoemate, take it away.
Here we go. Tied at 68, 10.6 to go. They get it in for Dixon. 7 seconds. Gets the screen to the left. Dixon with 5 seconds. A drive on Boozer. Got inside. Flipped it cross court. Trimble for the win. Hit it. At the buzzer. There may be a tenth or two left. It appears the Tar Heels have won here at home.
So that was nuts. That's the Duke side of this. Now let's go to the winning side. This was Jones Angel. Tyler Hansbury won the call. Here's how it sounded.
Ice cream from Wilson. Dixon with five. Dixon on the drive. Kicks it corner. Trimble for the win. Yes! At the buzzer! Trimble does it! Carolina's first lead is the last! They win it! 71-68.
It was an incredible moment, and I'm sitting there like getting some footage on my phone, and the shot goes in, and then fans just start pouring onto the floor, which I was already taken aback that, holy cow, I just witnessed. Listen, there was 0.4 on the clock, sure, so technically it wasn't a buzzer beater. It was a buzzer beater.
It was like a buzzer beater.
You beat Duke at the buzzer in the Smith Center. A Duke team that's only only lost one game up to that point. Number four team in the country or three?
I think they stayed at number four this year. I mean, this go around, and Carolina moved up to number 11.
Okay. Yeah, Carolina's 11, but I was pretty sure Duke was four at the time of the game.
And they stayed number four.
Okay. So they stayed put after that. But seeing fans pour on, seeing a court storm after a Carolina Duke game is something we've never ever seen before. We've never seen Carolina beat Duke at the buzzer. Let's just start there. At least I don't think so. They had the Austin River shot, and then on top of that, the court storm, it was just insane. But shout out to Seth Trimble, man, because this dude, he represents everything that college basketball is supposed to be about or has been about. Hubert Davis, after the game, he was talking about Seth, and the reporter, I believe, who was from Tar Heel 24/7, was asking a question about Seth and just how special that was for him and him hitting that shot. And before the reporter could even get a full sentence out, Hubert just cut him off and was like, he was the guy.
It's perfect. He was the one. Because during this time of NIL and transfer portal, having a kid as accomplished as Seth to stay at one school for 4 years, that shot was made by the perfect person at the right time. He's deserving of being remembered forever.
And you're going to see that shot played forever. I mean, it's It's going to be, sorry, DJ.
Coming to a Jumbotron near you.
Sorry for that Duke fan DJ over here. But, I mean, every time this game's played now, it's the Caleb Love shot. It's Tyler Hansbrough walking off bloody after Gerald Henderson intentionally hit him, took that shot. DJ shaking his head. But now you're going to see the Seth Trimble shot. The owner of Ben and Jerry's on Franklin Street, Seth Trimble. You're going to see that. And here he was after the game talking about what that moment meant to him.
It means so much. This rivalry means so much to me. This university means so much to me. It was the biggest point of emphasis today was to represent the University of North Carolina today. And we didn't really do that for 32 minutes of the game. But those last 8 minutes, those last four-ish minutes, whatever you want to call it, we did that. And I was able to hit a shot, but that's not the reason we won the game. Guys came up huge in that game, and it took us to lead to that shot to win. So everybody was so huge, and everybody represented North Carolina the right way.
He's a class act, senior, been there 4 years, entered the transfer portal after his second year didn't go so great, came back. It's just a great story for Seth Trimble. Coming up next, I want to try something new where I'm introducing a segment based on some of the best things I saw and maybe you saw as well over the weekend. That's coming up next on The Drive.
Talking sports the way you do, just louder with a mic. You're on The Drive, the Triad's only live sports talk show.
WSJS. As you can chime into the show, 336-777-1600. If you have thoughts on the Super Bowl last night, if you have thoughts on Carolina Duke the day before that, I mean, how can you can't ask for a better sports weekend than that. It's just a 1-2 punch, two of the best games in sports, right, just one by one. And you can also chime in on our YouTube comments as well, or on our X page on WSJS Radio. Where we are streaming this visually, like getting to a couple of the comments right now. Jay Davis, unique. I wonder who said it would be the Seth Trimble game. That would be Jay Davis. He did say that. I shot him a text after. It's like, you called that. Lil Dog 27407 says, congrats, WD, on the Tar Heels win. Yeah, Tar Heel fan WD over here. But we keep it objective, though. It was a classic, though. So, yeah, and then Deacon Brew, it was because it was a buzzer beater, referring to why did they storm the court. Yeah, I mean, that's what it was. That's why I have no patience for anybody's like, oh, you're Carolina. You shouldn't be storming the floor. You just beat Duke on a buzzer beater. I'm sorry, I'm not going to penalize those students for that. I'm just not going to do it. So here's something fun I thought we might do. It's a new segment that I'm workshopping here. And it's essentially, I'm titling it right now, Best Things I Saw Over the Weekend. It's what I got. And it's just where we go back, we look at some things that happened, viral social media moments, and we discuss them. So let's get into the best things I saw over the weekend. All right. Good music for this, DJ. So the first thing I had written down was actually a moment from the NBA where we now have James Harden in Cleveland with the Cavaliers. He made his debut over the weekend. And Donovan Mitchell is standing there with him. I believe it's on ESPN. They're trying to do, you know, your typical post-game interview after the game. And I guess, I don't know if Travis Scott's a Cleveland fan or if he's just a James Harden. I'm not sure, but out of nowhere, the rapper Travis Scott comes out of his first row seat courtside and does this.
After one game,
nah, we going to the Young. What are we doing? DM, JH, what the f***?
Yeah, so I wanted to have the video of this for the YouTube stream, but ESPN or whoever else may have edited this did not do a great job of bleeping out the F-bomb there from Travis Scott. So it had me rolling when I saw it, though. Shout out to the Cavaliers. Shout out to James Harden. Here's the next one. Did you see, DJ, the Super Bowl streaker?
I did not. I don't know how I missed that, well, but I did.
So I know how you could have missed it, because it's gotten to the point now with a lot of these games when a streaker, because, I mean, okay, we work in radio. Things are on a slight delay.
Right.
It's part of the production of it, a little behind the scenes there. Well, on the Super Bowl or on a TV broadcast, it's even more so delayed by, you know, maybe, I don't know, a minute or 30 seconds or whatever. So, and the reason, to further let you behind the scenes, the reason it is on delay is in case somebody curses like Travis Scott, or in case something, you know, you shouldn't see happens.
It's what we call a dump button.
Correct. Correct. But so in the Super Bowl, there was a streaker that got on the field. I forget what part of the game this was. And the reason you probably didn't see it was because they didn't show it. It was like just treated as a stoppage in play. But here was the moment right here. So you see, security's already running after him. And this guy, as you saw in the clip, sees Kyle Williams, Patriots receiver, coming at him. To which he does just like a QB slide. Like, yeah, let me get down here. So, shout out to Kyle Williams. Took care of this thing, but I just...
It reminds me of that time when... Harrison for the Pittsburgh Steelers. There was a guy that ran onto the field, and they couldn't catch him. Harrison. And he runs into Harrison. He picks him up and just body slams him. I'm like, that's what needs to happen to all of them.
You know, I thoroughly enjoy it when the athletes get involved like that.
Yeah.
Because maybe you're not afraid of, you know, Paul Blart or whatever security guard's running after you. If I see Aaron Donald coming at me, I'm getting out of the way. I'm surrendering. That's what I'm going to do.
Troy Polamalu.
Or him.
Bang.
Great hair. Troy Polamalu. So we didn't have time to get to this on Friday, but I'll still consider Friday the early
stage. It's the weekend.
It could be the way. I mean, I have a buddy. He's off on Fridays. It's the early weekend for some.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
It's always 5 o'clock somewhere.
There you go.
Shout out to Jimmy Buffett. But David Tepper came on with Pat McAfee. I didn't have that on my bingo card on Friday, but he addressed a number of things, maybe some of which we can get to later in the week, that are actually serious Panther topics and things like that. But there were Pat McAfee did the Lord's work. He got down to the bottom of the drink toss in Jacksonville. Do you remember this?
I do.
The little... So this is a bit of a... This clip's about a minute long, a little lengthier, but it's worth a listen. Here's Tepper's side of the drink-throwing incident, if you haven't heard it.
I just mentioned how, with that thing, I was very calm during that game. And in Jacksonville, you know, the way it's set up is the box is... They can get on a chair and lean into your box.
So
you can stand on the chair and come into your box.
Feels like a design flaw.
Yeah. The Pittsburgh guy, you can think about that. It's a design flaw. So, yeah. So,
but we want to let you know, we appreciate that you appear to be human in those moments, but obviously you provide a lot of opportunity for people to bury you whenever you do things.
Well,
like
you know, in that case, I was walking away, and then somebody, our player, Marquise Haynes, got knocked out on the field. And the guy, the people after harassing us the whole game, you know, harassing, which I'm just like, you know, walk away. The guy said basically, turned around and said, get your freaking player off the field. Our guy's knocked out of the field. I was walking out of the thing because I couldn't take it anymore. And then I just.
So we just can't. I mean, listen, David Tepper is as much of a fan of as any of us. And I will give him credit. And maybe this was a strategic move to start to put him back in the light a little bit. He's kind of backed off from that little two hands on type deal.
Look at me.
Yeah,
I'm the owner.
And I think it's working. I think fans now, something that he did do in that interview two or three times was called Tetero McMillan Tet. He doesn't like to be called Tet. His mother at the press conference when he got drafted was like, he doesn't go by Tet. They did it, I believe, at the award ceremony the other night when he won Offensive Rookie of the Year. His mom said it again. He's not T-Mac or Tetero or Nalo, is that he likes it. But I guess when you make as much money as Tepper has and you run things, I guess you call him that, I guess. Next on the list, it's not sports related, but it kind of is because he was in Chapel Hill on Saturday. J. Cole has his new album, The Fall Off, coming out, or it's out. And I believe he is from Fayetteville, I think.
I think you would be correct.
Tar Heel fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I had heard he was in Fayetteville, I think on Friday, through the grapevines there. And he came to Chapel Hill, and I've got a picture, if you're watching our YouTube or Xtreme here, where in a Honda Civic, he is selling CDs out of the trunk of his car for his new album. He did this at Chapel Hill. He also, I believe, came to North Carolina A&T.
He did.
After that, and did this. And here's, you know, again, we got the picture here on our YouTube stream. Here's a picture of him with a fan and with a Sharpie and some CDs in his hand. It's such a, this one was in Chapel Hill. But that is such a cool thing. It's such a cool way to give back. It's such a cool way to promote your album. You know, by not being too big, not being, you know, doing the whole, like, big league people. Like, just that doesn't go well, even though you could do it because you're that big. When you stay in the trenches with the fans like that, God, that translates so much. And I just thought it was the coolest thing this weekend to see that. Shout out to J. Cole. The last thing I got's this. Caleb Wilson. After Seth Trimble hit the shot, I was in the room for this. As soon as he walked out in the media area where they bring out the players post-game, he's wearing the belt. The bedazzled belt. Are you aware of the bedazzled belt, DJ?
I am not.
So, the bedazzled belt is something that he said that Wake, NC State, and Duke were all going to get before the season. They brought him out ahead of one the Ludacris concert in Chapel Hill. And he came on stage and he said that. And then there was a dunk feature on him on the magazine where he is, you know, got his Tar Heel uniform and he's wearing the belt, the bedazzled belt. He brought out the belt post-game after the win, and he did his post-game media with it draped around his neck. You could see that on my X page if you follow me there at the Will Dalton and all the coverage I put out. But then there was this where he brought it out on Franklin Street. He's in a Jeep. He's like, the top's off. He's up on the top of it. Derek Dixon's in the Jeep. Zayden High's in the Jeep. And here he is with the bedazzled belt. There he is. Fans are fired up around the Bronco. Caleb's loving it. He's fired up. He's posing for the camera. There you go. It's the best stuff I saw this weekend. Anyway.
Jeff from Winston-Salem wants to get in on the action.
Jeff from Winston. That's been the best things I saw this weekend. Jeff, go right ahead, man.
I was actually Jew from Winston.
Oh, Jew. Shout out. What's up?
I should have known better. Hey, no, sorry.
I wanted to tell you about that J. Cole. He was doing that because this was supposed to be his last album.
Oh, okay. Well, that bums me out.
And then that's the way he got his. That's the way he got started, like a lot of rappers did back in the day, selling CDs out of the back of their cars.
That's super cool. Okay, are you a J. Cole fan?
Of course, you can't be from North Carolina and not be a J. Cole fan.
I love it. Thank you for the call, Jew. I appreciate that. And he did call. It was going to be the Seth Trimble game. He did do that. So shout out to Jew and Winston. So coming up next. We got to have some story time. The former host of this show, Josh Graham, and I were in Chapel Hill on Saturday, spent the day up there, and I have a story involving the GOAT. That's next on The Drive. DJ, it's story time.
I love story time.
Oh, I love good stories.
Love story time.
It's great, right?
It is.
So, on Saturday, Josh Graham, the former host of this show, and who you can now listen to on Westwood One Sports. We can talk today on a Monday. We can do that. We went up for the day to Chapel Hill, which was a lot of fun. And I actually got to meet Josh's new producer for the weekdays, Denton Day, but we call him D-Day.
D-Day.
Yeah. So you can hear him.
Classic.
Very classic. Classic dude. So he actually drove down from Washington, D.C. And he drove back after the game.
That's an awful drive.
We left the arena at 11, I want to say 30-ish? No. 11:45, because I was getting some work done around 11:30-ish when I had been doing that for about a half hour. And I was like, where the heck is Josh at? Because he was like, yeah, he was doing his thing. I was doing mine. I was getting some stuff done. And I text him. I was like, where are you? And he calls me. He's like, apparently Denton had truck, because Franklin Street was such a nightmare, he was having trouble navigating, so he had to go like show him the way. So Denton get on his way until like 11:30 at night, and he had a long, I don't know how long the drive is to DC, but
it's about 5 hours, and it's painful. it's a drive. I've done it twice, and I absolutely hate driving there and driving back. It's just chaotic.
Well, I'll tell you what else was chaotic, was not just the game itself in Chapel Hill. That was enough to get, you know, to make you exhausted. But so we go up there, and to start the day, we went to Sup Dogs. Have you been to Sup Dogs?
Yes.
Yeah. You probably went to the one in Greenville, though, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So we were at the one there in Chapel Hill, and you know, Josh and I showed up first, and then Denton showed up shortly thereafter. So we went ahead and we ordered food, got some food going. And then the owner of Sup Dogs, Brett, comes up and he knows Josh from way back in his days in Greenville. That was actually the first time I'd really gotten to talk to him. I think I'd said hi to him once. But so we're sitting there, we're eating and chopping it up with him. And wouldn't you know it, Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson come to the door. Yeah. Bill's got a toboggan on. Jordan has these fluffy earmuffs. I posted a picture of it on my social media, at the Will Dalton, if you want to take a look at it. And the hostess at Sup Dogs goes, yeah, it's going to be an hour wait. She didn't know who they were. She did not realize that this was the GOAT, who should be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but isn't. And then Jordan Hudson. She didn't know who they were. I thought at least, okay, so, you know, to give her a little bit of grace, this is, you know, probably an 18-year-old sorority girl or whatever that's working there. Probably a freshman, I would assume, if she didn't even know who they were. But you know, I know some wives of my friends, and, you know, they don't always know who Bill Belichick is, a lot of them. They now know who Jordan Hudson is because of the tabloids and all that stuff. She didn't know who she was either. So they leave after hearing it's going to be an hour wait, and they're not going to get VIP treatment. And the owner, Brett, was, like, freaking out because he knows very well who Bill Belichick is. So he sends Jordan a DM on Instagram, and it's like, hey, come back. We'll take care of you. Come back. So eventually, they did come back. They had already eaten lunch at that point, but they did come back. They were very nice. Brett, I think, got a picture with him or something. But no, it was quite an experience seeing Bill Belichick and Jordan at the door, and nobody, the hostess, didn't know who they were.
What's up?
Yeah. What's up? What's up?
What's up, dog?
Literally. But then we took a tour around campus, you know, went to all the classic spots. Then you had the game, which was insane, but God, post-game was just as crazy. I mean, you saw Caleb Wilson there in the last segment with the bedazzled belt heading to Franklin Street.
Did Bill make the game?
Yes, they were at the game. In fact, and I won't get into the details of this, Jordan was wearing a shirt that was very much linked to, I believe, the massage parlor that Robert Kraft got into some trouble at. I think that's the detail there. Essentially kind of like, yeah, we're not in favor of Robert Kraft as he's about to, you know, he's not going to play, but his team's about to play for a Super Bowl tomorrow, you know, in the Super, yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, she is always doing something to try and get some headlines going. So I don't know how Carolina probably felt about that. But, God, postgame was just a circus because, again, you had one court storm, but over the PA announcers, as I'm watching this unfold, that Carolina Duke is having a court storming, over the PA he yells, "Get off the floor! Just as quickly as you got on it, get off!" Like yelling, like, because there's 0.4 seconds on the clock, apparently. And then they, you know, clock goes zero again, and then they rush the floor again, which is just, it was an insane sight. We'll get into some of the aftermath of the court storming here in just a little while, and I also want to ask David Glenn about his thoughts on that.
I went to the Louisville Wake game, and I was I was let down because I thought that Wake may pull off the upset because they came back in the second half. They actually tied the score and went cold.
We were watching that at Sup Dogs, and like I'll be honest, I didn't think it was going to go well without Cal Meese. They hung in there.
It was such a good game.
Juke balled out.
And the last, like, 1 minute, it just got away from them.
Yep.
And I hate it for Wake. I hate it for the fans. And I hate it for Coach Forbes.
We now welcome in David Glenn of the NC Sports Network to the proceedings. Been doing radio in this state a very long time. We would call him a legend as well, you know, along with the Drake Mays and the Sam Darnold, who are also state legends as well. But DG, how are you?
I'm doing great, Will. Always good to be with you.
Good to have you on. So just right out of the gate, I got to get the important questions first. What was the spread like at the Glenn household last night? Had you taken the Super Bowl?
Maria has been kind of in and out of town. She is by far the, you know, the food preparer. So we just basically went pizza, wings, appetizers, and adult beverages. And that seemed to keep everybody happy. It was by far our most dialed down Super Bowl party.
You can't go wrong with any of that. So we'll get to the hoop part of the proceedings here in just a minute. But, you know, you have covered sports in this state just overall for a long time, and Sam Darnold is a part of that, you know, coming through the Carolina Panthers there for a handful of years, kind of in the middle of the dysfunction of that franchise. But now he's a Super Bowl champion. He's had two incredible seasons now with Seattle and Minnesota last year. The winningest quarterback since 2022 in the regular season, by the way. I, you know, we love our fun stats, you know, when we do this. That's one of them. When you look at Sam Darnold's redemption story, do you think he is proof that sometimes we move on, we being NFL teams, they move on from quarterbacks a little too soon?
I think so. I'm not ready to crown Sam Darnold as, you know, an all-time elite NFL quarterback. I think there are Super Bowl championship winning quarterbacks who, while being very good at what they do, were kind of backboned, if you will, by elite defenses and, you know, good running games and other things to kind of support them. And when Sam Darnold was leading losing teams for the Carolina Panthers, the Panthers didn't have that kind of support. When Sam Darnold was having losing records as the starter for the New York Jets, his first 3 years in the NFL, the Jets did not surround him with that kind of support. So it's a combination of both. To his credit, Sam Darnold is a better quarterback these last couple of years for Minnesota and Seattle than he showed the Jets or the Panthers. But I think the even bigger factor than Sam Darnold's perseverance and improvement is that the Seattle Seahawks had a legendary defense this year. And I'm old enough to remember, you know, Trent Dilfer's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. And anybody who tries to tell that story without mentioning that the Ravens had a legendary suffocating defense. Or if you want to go real back to my childhood, Jim McMahon was a Super Bowl winning quarterback. And that 86 Chicago Bears team had one of the most dominant defenses in the history of the sport. So, again, I don't like to take anything away from whatever quarterback raises that trophy, man. More power to you. I did not know Sam Darnold had that in him. But let's not pretend the Seahawks or those Ravens or those Bears didn't win it all, starting with a defense that sometimes you were surprised the other team got a first down, much less a touchdown.
David Glenn of the NC Sports Network here with us on WSJS. Now getting to the good stuff. Carolina Duke the other night, I was there for it. I'll never forget it. And, you know, it was a game where Carolina, they looked kind of tight in the first half. But, you know, down the stretch, Henry Vassar finally got involved. And, you know, of course, that play at the end. And, of course, how could you forget Duke getting into foul trouble? So I set that up to ask, did Carolina go win that or did Duke lose it?
I think Carolina won it more than Duke lost it. You know, the bottom line was Caleb Wilson didn't get any help in the first half. Mm-mm. I mean, we all know that Cameron Boozer and Caleb Wilson are not only the two best players in the ACC, they're two of the best players in the entire country. And the reason Duke had a double-digit lead at halftime was that Cameron Boozer got help and Caleb Wilson did not. I mean, Cam Boozer got help from Isaiah Evans at times. He got help from Caleb Foster at times. It just felt like if Duke played, I think, eight men in the first half, seven of the eight, everybody but Nick Hemenia, did something well as the Devils built that double-digit lead. Carolina in the first half, I believe three of their five starters didn't have any points at all. And yet in the second half, what happened? Henry Vassar went from being largely invisible in the first half to one of the best players on the court in the second half. Seth Trimble hits the huge three at the end that'll etch him in the history books and, you know, the videosphere, if that's a thing, just the way Austin Rivers of Duke will always have his moment in that rivalry among many, many others. But, you know, it takes a village. This is not last year when Duke was so much better than the Tar Heels that we weren't surprised that the Blue Devils swept Carolina in three games. This is a closer call. Duke is legitimately a top five team nationally, but Carolina is legitimately a top 15 team nationally, and the Tar Heels were at home. When Caleb Wilson didn't get enough help, the Devils dominated the Tar Heels. When Caleb Wilson continued to play well, but then got a lot of help from Derek Dixon, for a little bit from everybody, really, in the second half, and then those big plays by Vassar and Trimble, well, that's the Tar Heel team that's capable of beating anybody, and they deserve a lot of credit for, what was it, the biggest comeback in that rivalry in 25 years.
So looking specifically at the Duke side of this, they now have two losses, Texas Tech and the other day against Carolina. I know you're somebody who studies these things as closely as anybody. You're good at spotting the details that others may miss. What are some of the things that you've seen in both of these losses? What are some of the similarities that you've noticed when Duke has lost each of these games?
Well, Duke is, again, one of the best teams in the country. So I do think you have to start there, because if you've only lost twice, and remember, Texas Tech was by 1 point and the Tar Heel game was by a last second three-pointer when the Devils had led for 39 minutes, 59 seconds and change. I don't want to sound like, you know, I'm missing the bigger picture. But to answer your question, I entered this season feeling a certain way about these Devils, and I still feel it this way in mid-February, and that is Duke does not have consistently outstanding point guard play, right? You know, we all know Cam Boozer is their best player. We could ask the question, even of Duke fans, they might not agree, who's their second best player? Some would say it's Isaiah Evans. Others would say it's Pat Gongba, right? Nobody would say it is their point guard play. And I've been around for all five of Duke's NCAA titles. And I can tell you, Bobby Hurley wasn't just a nice point guard, right? I mean, Bobby Hurley was really good to elite in those first two Coach K titles. Fast forward, you know, whether it was Jay Williams or kind of Chris Duhon, remember late in his freshman season, was a heck of a point guard as well. More recently, the John Shire team. It was the combination of John Shire and Nolan Smith. Remember, they kind of changed mm-hmm. their roles midstream. But the bottom line was, whoever had the ball in his hands at the point guard position was not just a nice player. Those guys were really, really good players. Tyus Jones, you know, most recently. These are future NBA dudes. Now, Duke doesn't automatically need Bobby Hurley-level elite, Jay Williams-type elite point guard play, in part because how do they use Cam Boozer? He's kind of like a point forward, right? Like, they're not running the Duke offense the way they ran it with those other guys. But Caleb Foster, the junior, and Caden Boozer, the younger brother of Cameron, you know, they're nice, good college, solid college basketball players, but they're not yet more than that. And I think if Duke wants to accomplish its loftiest goals, they're going to need those guys to get better. And especially Caden Boozer, we often see, and you know this, Will, a lot of freshmen are better versions of themselves in late February and March than mm-hmm. they were in November and December. Maybe Caden Boozer is on that journey. Cameron's so good, he was great from day one. Those guys are the exceptions. But other younger players need some time. Duke has most of the pieces where they want them. But, yeah, they need Isaiah Evans to be a more consistent scorer on the wing, and they need better overall point guard play to get everywhere that they want to go.
David Glenn of the NC Sports Network here with us on The Drive. And getting to the court storming piece of this, you know, it's twice now that we've heard from John Shire after a game, very disappointed. You know, the first time was 5 minutes from where I sit when Kyle Filipowski got, you know, banged up in the muck there at the Joel. This one was, you know, Shire is saying that a staff member got punched. I've looked at a lot of video, a lot of angles of this. I haven't seen anybody get punched. I'm not saying, you know, Shire's not right. I'm just saying I haven't seen it. Maybe you have in another angle you've seen. But I have seen a bottle get thrown in Shire's direction, goes past him, and I think it hits somebody. Maybe that's what he's referring to. But we've heard Shire like this a couple of times now. Is there a way that they can effectively police this stuff? Like, where do you stand on court storming, DG?
It's really hard to perfectly police it, but we have seen situations, whether it's using ropes or, you know, large security people with their arms chained like a human chain to protect the visiting team and player coaches staff. So it's been done. Bubba Cunningham of UNC deserves credit for officially apologizing that the Tar Heel folks, who, as you said, had to deal with two court stormings. But I'm glad you mentioned all of that, because let's start here. The young person who threw a bottle, that's the first person who needs to be dealt with.
Right.
That is an outrageous act. And, you know, whatever law I could find, given my legal background, I mean, it's assault and battery for starters. Like, you're just not allowed to do that. That's a really, really, really low class, unacceptable, should be prosecuted if they can figure out who did it type of thing. That's the starting point. Now, John Shire, I believe he tried to say at his teleconference, but he did not use these words. I think he tried to say, hey, man, right after the game, I went and saw my guy with a bloody lip, and I went to the press conference, and I used the words. He did not apologize for his choice of words, punch in the face. I think he could have apologized for that choice of words. I think he should have apologized for that choice of words. Having dealt with him since he was a player, I have a tremendous amount of respect for John Shire as a human being, as a basketball player, as a coach. He is in the 99th percentile of classy human beings. I think he made a mistake here. I think in the emotion of the moment, seeing somebody's bloody lip, he went in and said, hey, one of a couple of my guys got punched in the face. He shouldn't have said that. He shouldn't have said that. Now, everybody knows, heck, the court storming reflects what? Human emotion on a really high scale.
Mm-hmm.
if you are as competitive as the players on that floor and the coaches in those locker rooms, you're going to maybe make some mistakes in your intensity too. And I think John Shire made a mistake with his choice of words at the press conference. Again, I'm glad Bubba Cunningham apologized. I think John Shire should have apologized for his choice of words, but John Shire should not apologize for saying, whereas he's kind of changed his tune on court storming, he said he was okay with it in the general sense, that the highest priority has to be the safety of the coaches and players, really on both teams. And I don't think there's anything wrong with underlying that. And I also give him credit for mentioning at the press conference, I don't want to make it all about this. He said Carolina played a great game and Carolina deserved to win. If he hadn't said that, you know, he would have deserved more criticism. I think this was just an accidental poor choice of words where, you know, he tried to do the right thing and he didn't the first time. And I think he just wants to turn the page, move on to the next game without revisiting his own mistakes or some of the nastiness that happened at the end of that game.
Last thing for you, DG, on the way out. I just got about 2 minutes here. NC State, they've won six straight. They're on a nice run here. The first of those six being a ranked win against Clemson. And now they go to Louisville, a number 24 ranked team, tonight. What has impressed you most about what the Pack have started to do under Will Wade?
I think their offensive diversity just jumps off the page, right? I mean, I don't think State is going to be an elite defensive team. They just don't have a lot of height and length in the post to block shots and keep the offensive rebounders at bay. But at the other end of the court, NC State is going to be a handful to stop in any given game or looking ahead to the ACC tournament. You have Quadir Copeland, who's become a first-team All-ACC candidate with the way he's both scoring and distributing. Darian Williams, I know, hasn't been exactly what he was at Texas Tech, but he's been close and a very good player in this league. Paul McNeil's one of the best three-point shooters in this league, and that list goes on. Matt Abel's a really talented freshman scorer off the bench. Van Allen Lubin has thrived with the additional playing time that Will Wade promised he would give to Lubin. That's a heck of an offensive team. So individual player improvement, I think they've gotten better on defense. So I think Will Wade mostly has his team where he wants it to be, although tonight's challenge at Louisville, that is going to be a difficult one because the Cardinals are at home especially are difficult to beat.
Yeah, Yum Arena, not an easy place to play. DG, we love the insights as always. Thank you so much, and we'll catch you next time, my friend.
Thanks, bud. Keep up the good work.